On this interview special, we learn from the best. What can the rest of us learn from Norway? Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to AV News Daily for Saturday the 17th of October. My name is Martin Lee, and today is Saturday special interview. Now, there's one country in the world not just leading the way slightly, but doing it in spectacular style. They are so far ahead of everybody else. It's not even funny. Over 75% of new cars sold have a plug socket on, and it's not uncommon for 50% of new cars sold each month. Over half of all cars sold to be pure electric. What can we learn from the Norwegian model? What are they getting right? And what's their secret sauce? Well, today we're speaking to one of the leading voices in the Norwegian EV industry. He works with charging networks, with car companies, and regularly speaks to various groups of all sizes about EV adoption. It's Jan from emobilitynorway.com, and he's here today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, and hello.
Good to have you on. People hear me talk about e-mobility at Norway on the podcast at the end of the show because you're one of our supporters, but they might not know that what that business is all about is educating people and in times consulting with people as well, courses and lectures, and also giving advice to people. So why don't you just fill in the listeners a little bit on what e-mobility Norway is all about?
Yeah, it's... For me to work with e-mobility, that is the main thing, and helping people understand e-mobility and to do it right. I love cars and I love driving around. That is one of the things. So, and also I'm a nerd about charging and safety. So that is the core business. I'm from the electro side and been working with the electrification of everything from bakery production to papers production and now charging. And I also very much into the safety part of it and how to get it to work for the people. Because, you know, whatever you do, you need to have the people with you. It's not all about the technique. The technique is just a tool. And then you have the people to understand it and use it and hopefully love it. That is important. So what I do is divide it into two. As you told, the whole courses. I think I know around 300-400 courses in Norway, educated a lot of the electricians here, and also the car companies and so on. And also I do some talks and so on. The other part is helping people going into e-mobility. So when Fortum Charge and Drive was starting up, I think it's 8 years ago now, then I was helping them with the technical part. And I did the same with when Ionity did start up in Northern Europe. And I also worked a bit with Circle K. A lot of household buildings and so on, what you call it, cooperative for flats and so on, helping them build good charging infrastructure. Because in Norway, when you have 50% of the sales is electric, pure electric cars, now 60%, you need to build good charging infrastructure. You cannot put up a box here and a box there for these few people.
I think for anyone who watches one of the well-known Norwegian YouTubers, Bjørn Nyland, he is often saying, well, I could stop here, or I could go 5 miles on, or I could stop there, or I could go 10 kilometers on and stop there. And there seems to be so much infrastructure where you are. And that is a result of how far ahead, I'll use that word because it's not really a race, but how far ahead Norway is on the rest of the world. So let's just talk a little bit about that to start with, because you have been showing the rest of us how to do it. And I appreciated that on an intellectual level, but it wasn't until I first came to Norway 2 years ago now. Now, we didn't come to Oslo, but we toured the fjords, so Stavanger and places like that. But even in those communities, we'd be walking down the street and you'd hear zzz, 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 and then a combustion car would come past. But the combustion cars were noticeable because there were so many EVs. And it was that first moment of BMW, Nissan, Zoe, i3, Leaf, i3, another Leaf. And I felt something so, you know, in me, like, I get it now. Now I understand. So How long has this electric journey in Norway been going for, and is it all down to legislation and policy that Norway is so far ahead of the rest of us?
We are very used to electricity. We had this hydropower for over 100 years. So for us, electricity is well known, is a part of the culture. But also, I think Norway always wanted to be a car manufacturer. And when this comes around, the millennium change, we had some few producers. And there was an aim to try to help them start up. That didn't succeed, but we did keep the benefits. And of course, when Nissan Leaf was coming in 2011, then you suddenly had a car that was usable. And when this growth starts, I think you also see it now in the rest of the world, in England and so on, then you see the neighbor manage. And when the neighbor can manage, you can manage, and so on. So you have this growth. And then you have these people saying, never going electric. Suddenly they see that this is cheaper, it's easier, and it's much more comfortable to drive. So they choose electric because it's smart. I will never go back to an internal combustion car. I would love to drive an Alfa Romeo or something on a Sunday. For usual driving, never, because the electric car is so much better. And we don't have these limitations that people think in the mind. They are not out there in the real world.
Was the biggest incentive price? Norway generally is a very, very expensive place to live and to visit. It's not cheap, but to buy a brand new car with a fossil engine is very, very expensive. But EVs are cheap. Was it mainly that financial incentive that kicked it off?
Yeah, of course, it's the bus line. And the financials. Bus line is, of course, now we have some restrictions in Oslo. So if you drive alone in the EV, you have to use the ordinary track. And I had to do that last week. I was visiting a customer and I was standing there for 45 minutes extra. Normally, I drive the bus line.
Straight down, yeah.
All the buses has problem because of all the EVs. It's like for a period. We have to use the ordinary line if it's not two or three in the car. So the bus line and the very expensive other cars. I think the biggest in the start was the cost of normal cars. Twice the taxes as in Sweden, more or less.
Oh wow. Okay, so it's so much cheaper to buy to buy an EV. And of course, the funny, not funny, haha, but the curious thing is that Norway has such a history in making money from fossil fuels, but was just very smart about how you invested it and how you're spending it.
That's true, really, when this comes to our oil business. Every Norwegian should be happy for it. What did happen because the world didn't need oil. We didn't have an alternative. And the government was very smart in how they did invest it. So that is really good. And that is not what electrification is about, saying that oil was wrong. But we are now in new times. The horse wasn't wrong 200 or 100 year ago, or 200 year ago, but the changes comes. And now we see the problem with oil and burning fossil. So we need to change. And we need to know use this know-how now to build like wind turbine out in the sea and so on and change on. And this adaption, before the oil, we had the electricity. So electricity is not new for us. Of course, when we produce, I think it's 99% fossil-free electricity also in the grid. So it's common sense to go back again.
The early days, going back 10 years, so you started in 2011 with this electric journey. It really was just the Nissan Leaf. I mean, there wasn't really much else, was there?
I did see the IMU back in 2011. I was planning to buy me an IMU, but I was testing it for 10 minutes and I was waiting some more months to get the Nissan Leaf.
Yes, yeah, and then that
And
Nissan Leaf
then,
really did open up so many opportunities for people to buy a mainstream car at a pretty good price.
Yeah, of course, the first Nissan Leaf was expensive, but not more expensive than other cars.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit more, but and then we had the Kia Soul coming, the e-up from Volkswagen, the BMW i3, and yes, every kind of car. And then this strange American company we did hear about coming with
And
these
then they
big
arrived.
cars.
Yeah, they've been around. There was
Yeah.
a lot of Model S's and X's, old ones as
Yeah.
well, old S's. When I say when I came to Norway, that was 2 years ago now. And
Yeah.
yeah, certainly plenty of them have been sold there. Let's talk about your work with charging networks because I think this is a really interesting insight that I'm eager to learn from. When did you start working with charging networks? How far back do you go? And what was the landscape like then? Because even now, there's not enough chargers, but I guess go back a few years and it was a real problem.
Yeah, it's quite interesting because except for some test charging in my first real EV charge was in September 2011, and I was responsible for putting up that quick charger. So
Cool.
that was like the community here around where I'm living, Østfold is called, is the thumb of Norway down to the Swedish border. And we was putting up this charging station, and then Fortum did come on, was helping them getting everything. Everything was open, so we just go there and charge. I was helping putting on the payment
Oh,
systems.
so but at the beginning they weren't charging. So is this DC fast charging or AC?
DC fast charging, everyone was just open because no one had the payment system that was usable.
So where did these companies, where do these charging companies come from? How did they, the early ones, how did they start and what's the history?
The early one was a lot of help from the government. That was around Oslo, and then in Bergen and around Stavanger, you had the local grid companies. Then you had Fortum coming on.
Yes.
So Fortum is a big Finnish company, also selling electric power in Norway and also owning the grid back then.
Yes.
And then also we have a company called Grønn Kontakt. Green Contact, that was owned from several of these grid companies or energy companies going together and building this more to compete with Fortum.
Right, okay.
So it was a lot from the grid side or from the energy side that was sponsoring it. Yeah.
Wow. So those early conversations were based around how do we charge people? And how do we put payment systems in place? And I presume also, where do we put the chargers? And you know, and how many? Was it just a case of putting one charger here and one charger
Yeah, it was just one at a time. And the
there?
biggest part of my first charger was to go around finding a location that was quite good. I was finding a very good one. It was a restaurant there,
Yeah.
but with an grid station. So we don't have to dig more than a few meters
Of
because
course.
every 100, 100 euro or 1,000 crowns is more or less the same.
Yeah.
1 meter of digging is 1,000 crowns or 100 euro.
Right.
So we didn't have budget for, maybe we was receiving the charger as some kind of gift or something, and then putting it up and try to get things together.
Wow. And what was the hardware like back then?
In the first part, it was just Shademo.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And it was the Nissan Leaf and the IMU charging. So then it was quite okay. But then we did get CCS. And we get new cars like the e-up and the i3. And was some strange. It was DBT was a French company's delivering charging station for Fortum.
Yeah.
BMW i3 was charging. After that, you had to restart the charger for an e-up to charge. So something did go wrong. So it was all these kind of crazy things. So I was driving around. And when I was starting for Fortum, I did do a deal with Volvo. So I had one of the C30s. Very limited range and quite limited charging capacity, 22 AC, but no one had 22 AC charging
Right,
stations.
yeah.
Oh,
Oh
that
man.
was quite tough driving around. Then I had to buy myself a Tesla, so I've had a Tesla Model S for some years also.
Very nice, very nice.
Yeah.
Let's just fast forward to today. We'll jump around a little bit, but so that was 10 years ago, and now you mentioned that you've worked with the likes of Ionity more recently. What's the conversation like now?
No, the conversation is more like getting the business together and so
Oh,
on.
okay.
Yeah, and also communication, not just to the between the car and the charger, but also all this ecosystem behind. I'm
Yes.
working
Yeah,
or I'm a leader of the Norwegian, what you call TC69 committee, technical committee, working with the standards. And what you see as a user, it's just a little part of it. But on the other hand, we had this problem. And when you get this new, like the Ionity charging stations from Tritium and from whatever else also, you get new cables, heavier cables, because you have fluid cooling of the cables. And then suddenly you get problem because the locking mechanism on the CCS contact didn't work. And Bjørn Nyland has made some videos about it. So we have to hold it for some seconds, and then suddenly you have this new thing. So we have to tell the customers or helping them, and also ask the car manufacturers to reprogram the cars. The locking mechanism was so we still had this childhood sickness on the equipment, because
Wow.
when you do things change. So, but what was the biggest issue with the Ionity? I think it's getting the whole ecosystem together, and also, of course, rolling out these huge sites is quite, yeah, it's a lot of work to get everything to work and get all the,
Yes.
you know, in Norway, we have to have special improvements to build the high voltage or middle voltage grid stations
Okay.
and own them. So what's that kind of things? And yeah, there's a lot of different thing coming up. And of course, getting the power. We talk about 1.5 megawatt of power here. So it's quite big equipment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess from the consumer's point of view, they all a consumer wants is a bank of, 20 fast chargers or high power
Yeah.
chargers, and they want to plug in and it for just to work. And some people want it cheap. I don't mind paying because I'm getting a good service in return. Some people want a good price as well, but I'm not fussed about paying a little bit more if I get a great service. But that is fantastically hard to do, but
Yeah.
Tesla seemed to make it look easy, because when you turn up to a Tesla supercharging station, there are 8, 10, 12, 20 of them. So what is it they do that you think we can learn from?
I think when it's come to the technical part, it's one type of car, and it's the same company making the chargers. It's making it a lot easier because you don't have to have a different kind of charging stations talking to different kind of cars. So we have much more control of the communication. When it comes to the price, of course, a big turnover, big volume makes the price better. But I think also there are some kind of hidden subsidies here. Of course, I don't think Tesla earns money on the charging yet. Because and also because we have all these different type of chargers together with all the different type of cars, you need to also to have much more safety systems, because you have to be sure that everything is working. Tesla don't work that much with of course it's safe, but it's safe because it's so easy to have the control of the system, because they have all control of all the parts in the system. When you have a system that no one owns, no own the parts or the same person, then or same company, then you lose the control, and you have to have the safety features much more strict there. And of course, like I know when you're putting up like Ionity putting up a 350 kilowatts charging point, It's 100 to 150,000 euros per point, and you have 4 or 6 points at one site. Someone has to pay for it.
Which at the moment is the car manufacturers getting together to pool the resources and do it, whereas Tesla are doing it on their own. But the car makers are not making the hardware. So although they're doing amazing things with charging networks, with Ionity and others as well, and we see this with Electrify America in the US and Electrify Canada, they got so much of it done well and that they got a lot of it right. But the final piece of the jigsaw, which is the hardware, let them down. And now they're even though Electrify America are a new network, they're now ripping out charging stations and putting in updated hardware. Do you think that there's any option to try and join up that to vertically integrate that like Tesla are doing, or are we always going to have people over here who make the hardware, people over here who then buy it as a third party and install it? How can we make that process better?
Yeah, I think this process is under development because if you go to the Tesla models, you have to have Ford charging station, you have to have Volvo charging station, Audi or Volkswagen Group charging station. It's going to be really ridiculous. So we have to have a common type of charging station for all the cars. But then the standardization job, the best model in the long term, but it's not the best one in the short term because you get this error, you get this understanding of the standard and so on. And since I was talking about earlier about the i3 and the eUp and so on, that was also the same standard. And now we have all these changes, it gets much better. We don't have to go around restarting charging stations, but still we have problems. And of course, when you go from 50 kilowatts to 350 kilowatt, you introduce liquid cooled cables and so on. You have all these new things that can go wrong. And you have to work together. We have 10 different vendors of charging equipment, and then you have 20, 40 different cars models coming up more and more. So it will take some time. And I'm very happy because even though I drive a lot, most of the charging is at home, at the charging station, working all the time.
Now
And of course, in Norway, we are lucky because we have, as you were saying earlier, a lot of charging infrastructure. So I remember when I was driving to Gothenburg from where I'm living, and it's just one charging station that I have to reach to, and it has to work, or it's back to the household outlet and tens of hours to charge the car.
Where do you mostly drive? Do you mostly drive around Norway or Northern Europe? And you've done hundreds of thousands of kilometers electrically. So where do you normally drive?
Mostly it's in Norway because I'm holding courses in Norway, and so I also have. I think I was counting this other day, 15 different countries. I think it's Norway, Sweden, Denmark, of course, Lithuania, Germany, Czech Republic, Switzerland, Austria, Italian. So maybe I told you earlier, I've been driving to Toscana with an i3 94. When me and my beautiful wife we are out on driving. We're not commuting or transport. We are on a trip. We are on a road trip. We stop, we charge the car quite early because the i3 has a very good charging curve. So the higher we have the level on the battery, the faster it charges until 85, 90%. So that is very good. So then we just stop, we go in, grab a cup of coffee, look at things around, see people. And then we drive on. So it's a part of the trip, stopping and charging, and sometimes also talking with people.
What are the challenges of traveling through different countries and securing those chargers, payment, and those kind of
Payment
things?
is, yeah, payment is was quite easy in most of Europe, but Italy was that was hard. It was really hard. Yeah, this is 2 years ago now, so I hope it's getting better. I know Ionity is building in Italy, but I was using New Motion card. Most of the stations in Germany was connected. I can use them, And when we was coming to Czech Republic, they had an upgrade of the system, so every charging station was open. That was perfect.
Perfect.
So this was in fact just Italy that was problem with starting the charging.
Interesting. Okay. Well, okay. I'll ask a question which you may not have an answer for, but I'd be interested to know your what you think. You've been working with charging manufacturers or charging networks since the beginning. Why are charging networks not, or chargers not under a cover when every petrol station has a cover? Why do I get wet when plugging in my EV? Why don't they realize they need to cover them over?
Yeah, in the beginning it was a cost thing,
Okay.
of course. But also when you had when you fill petrol, you have to stand with the car for 3 or 4 minutes
Right.
when you connect the car, and if everything is working as it should, then you could just plug in and you can go.
Yeah. That's the idea.
Yeah.
That hope that's
Yeah.
the idea. And then too often we
That's
are
the idea. I know it's not all the times like this. And you have this older charging sites where you have this, like where you're waiting for the bus, the same kind of small houses.
Yep.
You use them, that is giving some cover. But when you have this drive-through, like Jonathan used, then you have it completely open. And of course, then plug and charge will be perfect just to connect the car and leave on.
Plug and
But then
charge is
back
going to
to
be
what we was
amazing.
talking about,
Yes.
different kind of people or that wants to get a part of the payment and everything. That is a whole discussion about plug and charge, of course.
Of course. Let's talk a little bit about your work with businesses and fleets, because
Yeah.
as you mentioned, your car is nearly always on charge at home, and yet the cars, the vehicles that do the most work need to be moving. If they're not moving, they're not paying for themselves or earning money, like taxis or buses. Or
Yeah.
if they're leased, then they're not returning an investment. Where are we with fleets, and what needs to be done next to get more EVs into big fleets?
I think it's, of course, we need to get the good cars with the range, but I think that start coming now. And you have to, I think before you introduce electric cars, you need to work with a strategy. Because normally when we talk about charging infrastructure, we talk about home charging, we talk about destination charging, quick charging, and so on. But from the user's perspective, we need to talk about more like basic charging. What is the basic? Is it inside? And we have to talk about opportunity charging. When this truck stops outside a shop, can it be wireless charging there? And also what I like to call emergency charging or something like that is like if you have this bad day, you need to have this everything. How do I quick charge? Do I have everything ready? So I was working with a taxi company some years ago, and he was looking into this strategy. So it's you need to, I think you need to work with the strategy to help the people understand, because of we are used to drive electric, and we understand that this works good for us, and we can do our transportations. Even though it's much shorter than other people, at least normally. But it's a lot of private persons also just driving 50 kilometers a day say that it's impossible to drive electric for them because they once a while doing something or something is happening. So we have to work with the mindset, we have
Yes.
to build a good strategy, and of course we have to get the good cars in the market. The cars are now a bit limited, I think.
Yes.
The thing is happening.
Well, that brings us back round to where we started at the beginning of the podcast, which is something that I try to do with this show, but something that is your whole business, which is education. And whether that is helping, whether that's talking to students for free or consulting to businesses, it's surely all about education. So let's talk about the various stakeholders in that process. And let's start at the top of the chain, but let's start with policymakers, governments, legislators, the kind of people that can tell builders or you know, when a new building or apartment block is being built, you must put charges in. Those kind of decisions. What's Norway doing, and what should we all be doing at that very high level of decision making?
I think we have started slowly but it's not that much regulations still. But it's very important for when you're building to get to put in charge, not maybe charging infrastructure, but have a plan on how to put it in. To have a big enough grid connection, of course. But when I'm working with like you say, we call it house cooperatives in Norway.
Yes.
And say you have 100 people living there, how many 100 parking spots, but just 10 wanting charging.
Yes.
Then you cannot build for just those 10. You have to make a plan for everyone. You can put up the physical parts for the 10 people, but you have to talk and plan for everything. And that's what you have to do when you have a new house also. Make the grid connection big enough. It's not much for each car, in fact, when you go down to and have good power distribution and good power regulations. The cars don't need much. Normally, you don't have to upgrade the grid connection when you do it right.
So what should people be charging? What speed would you say somebody should charge at home?
Always you have to adjust the charging point to the installation in the house, not to the car. So that is the first thing. The charging station and the charging points is a part of the electric installation. It's not a part of the car. That is something people confuse. I see all the time people, I have bought me a Tesla. Mm-hmm. What kind of charger do I need?
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, what kind of power do you have in your house that is free? And then you can trick it a bit because you can use some power management systems. And then you have to look into how much do you drive? And can you afford to once every second week stop and quick charge, even though you're not in a long trip because and they have a smaller one. So it's not the battery. And also that is the same when it comes to building charging infrastructure in bigger house. You have to look into the house. And you have to look into what kind of power is available and then what you need. Because an average car parked in 10 hours, it needs 1 kilowatt or something for charging for normal use.
Mm.
That is less than what the minimum on what a charging point can give.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the moment you drive long, you need to have 5, 6, 7. And with a good power management system, you can have it because all the cars getting fully charged quite quick. And the few cars needed that day a lot of charging, they can do the fast charging at the end of the night. And the next morning you have a lot of, you have every car full. So we have to do this both the capacity and to do the charging system smart with good power management system and so on.
So if there's this kind of idea of a new complex with 100 people and only 10 people need power now, how do you balance the fact that in the future, more than 10, 20, 30, 50 people will want to charge? Do you just put in more chargers than we need now in 2020? Or do you only put those 10 chargers in, but say to people, look, you know, in 5 years' time, there's going to need to be 100 charges. So how do you advise that?
Depends on the system. And you have to divide it in that kind of how you have the infrastructure that is behind, and you have the chargers. A lot of buildings like that, we build in the infrastructure, so we have the cables or whatever. So it's very easy to connect the chargers. And if you just put off the chargers, you have to make a specification that says that this charger, when we have 30 chargers, we need to regulate the power. We have to have power management. So we don't have to put up the power management at the beginning, but you have to make a specification saying that also these first 10 need to be able to be managed.
Yes.
So that is part that I'm working with helping now to telling people, not forget that it's just 10. You have to think of everyone,
Yeah.
and you have to do it smart. And if you do it smart in the beginning, then you most of the time don't have to upgrade the grid connection or anything.
And what about workplaces? Because workplace charging is, I think, well, before COVID, I think workplace charging was a massive opportunity because if my car isn't here, it's probably at work. And actually, if we could have solved that challenge, then DC rapid charging with crazy fast speed becomes less important. But COVID, working from home, that may have changed things. But what are your thoughts on workplace charging?
I think workplace charging is quite important, but because a lot of people, that is maybe the only place they can charge.
Oh, okay.
But they have to do that also right, because if you just open it up, everything is free, then you get a problem. I have
Right.
been working with quite a lot big wholesales company in Norway, have a lot of people working, several thousand at a site.
Yes.
And I say charging is free. What I did see is then people living nearby coming early in the morning, maybe living, this is outside of the country, of the city. They was going there, occupying the charging station, even though they didn't need, they could charge at home.
Oh no.
People traveling from the city don't have the possibility to charge at home or had a long, so they had to charge to get home again, didn't get the charging points. So first of all, you have to have some kind of regulation on it. And
Yeah.
you have to start with that before, because people then say, if you just open it up, people say, I bought an EV because I did get free charging. And
Yeah.
now you, and now I have to invest in a charging station, blah, 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 blah. So we have to say, maybe it's the double price from charging at home. So if 1 kilowatt hours costs 10 cents at home, maybe very cheap for, it's cheap in Norway, a
Yes.
bit more expensive other places. Maybe you should double the price at the work site
Yes.
and four times the price maybe on the quick charger. Then you have a system that is, you choose what is the best for the total picture. Of course, you can also give
Okay.
away charging for free, but then you have to put some time limitations or people that has not the problem, the possibility to charge at home or whatever, just to help them, but not just open it. I've seen that.
Yeah, I like the idea of charging a little more than at home so that because everybody will normally operate in their own self-interest. So if they can save money at home, they'll charge at home. But if they live in an apartment or can't have access to charging, it's not so expensive that it becomes ridiculous. But it's a little bit more. I love that. I love that idea. And also, like anything for free seems like a good idea, but generally I think it's a terrible idea because people won't value it. They won't. Anything that you get given for free, you take for granted immediately. And it just you just go, okay, well the charging is free. And even a small price can help people value. They value it more. They value it more. Okay, well, before you go, if people are listening to this and deciding to get in contact with you to find out more, what's the best way to do that? How can people find you?
Immobilitynorway.com is my site. I think that is the easiest way to get in contact with me.
Okay, and people can go to emobilitynorway.com, find out all about the services that you provide and the different kind of people that you work with. Are you optimistic, excited about the short-term future? We have more cars coming soon from the big car makers. VW have had a big September with the ID3, ID4 coming soon next year. Rivian, Lucid, more cars. There's other car makers that still seem like they're a little behind. BMW, Mercedes could be a little bit quicker. What are your feelings for the next couple of years?
I think we're going to see a lot of new models coming, or be, but also we see that going electric, especially from a traditional company, is hard to go there. To this translation from petrol or something over to electric is hard. We've seen that with Volkswagen. We see that everybody done quite well, but it goes slowly. And we have the problem also with the new companies coming in, because they have to start. Tesla made it,
Mm.
and some other companies making it. So it's very interesting to see. But I think we're going to see a lot of different models. The thing is, when the buyers get moving from the early adopters to the maybe now we are in early normal or something, and then we get maybe to the late majority, then also the cars and the education and everything, you have to do it much better. You have to help the car salespeople also. It's not just about the car, it's the whole process. I think that is very important. Even though I'm a nerd and I'm an engineer, I always see that the people, you have to help the people. Like the car salespeople is the first really professional a new EV buyer is meeting. He can be on Facebook, get a lot of advice, but from who? Not always the best one,
Yes.
to be honest. And you can see a lot on YouTube also, but it's quite fragmented. You have to put it together. So the car salesman and the car company, they really have a very important job to do also. But of course, I'm very optimistic about the new cars coming. So I've been testing quite a few of them. You've seen some pictures.
Yes.
Yeah,
What's your
yeah.
favorite?
As a balance between cost and performance, I think the Polestar is a beautiful car.
Yeah.
And I have had two BMW i3s, and I really love those cars. And as I said, I was going to, or we was going to Toscana 2 years ago. This year he was going northern Norway. It's
Yes.
quite far. Driving 900 kilometers in one day
Yes.
in an i3, people say it's impossible. We did it on small roads, not any stress at all. But we had the charging infrastructure in Norway.
Yes. Yeah, well, I can't
But if you,
I can't wait to experience it for myself, hopefully.
So it's a reason. I don't get paid from either Polestar or BMW at the moment, but the i3, I hope really that will survive because that is a fantastic car.
Yes.
And also, I'm looking forward the Mustang. The XC40 from Volvo is going to be very interesting. Of course, the ID4. I think the ID3, I'll be sitting in it. I think it's a very good car for just for use, but I like the car to be a bit higher class. And then I didn't see that in the pre-production of the i3, ID3. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So the for you, the ID4 is the opportunity for.
ID4, I think, is going to be very interesting. So maybe I have to go over to just have this kind of month by month car
Yes.
instead of owning it, so I can change.
It's a good idea. It's a good idea. These rental or subscription services.
Subscription is the nightmare. So I've been wondering if that maybe is the way to go now,
Oh,
to
there it
have
is.
one car at every month.
Well, if people are listening to this, I know I have plenty of Norwegian listeners or even in the Nordic countries. And even if you want to just get in contact with Jan, you can do go to emobilitynorway.com and find him, and we're mutual friends. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, do please check out the links in the show notes to Jan's businesses and to Jan's resources, and to see what you can pick up if you're interested, having listened to that podcast all the way through to learn a little bit more. There's the podcast show notes. There's the YouTube notes. I'll pop links to his stuff in there as well. And you can find out more. And I'll catch you on Monday for a brand new week of news.